For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the latest Gen X Music Show, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Before I get started, I'd like to talk to you about Blanchard Family Wines, located between 18th and 19th in Blake and Wazee in beautiful lower downtown Denver, Colorado, just a couple blocks away from Coors Field, right in the middle of the dairy block. When you go down, there's multiple options you can have, and one of them is either going in and picking up a bottle of wine, like I know a lot of people do. You can have it delivered to you locally, and you can also have it shipped to you if you're out of town. And you can just go in and have socially distant great time with some friends at a small group of friends. Go in and enjoy all their reds, spectacular reds, their partnership with a Western Slopes winery called Storm Cellars that does Rieslings. And anything you want, they even have like a variety of desserts and meats and cheeses and all that stuff. They basically the whole experience. My favorite personally is the 2017 Cabernet, which is really, really good. Once again, they're located between 18th and 19th and Blake and Wazee in beautiful lower downtown Denver, Colorado, just a couple blocks away from Coors Field, right in the middle of the dairy block. When you go in, tell them Jeff Morton from CSG Podcast sent you there. You can also go to bfwdenver.com and book your virtual wine tasting today. I would also like to tell you about my friend Andy Feinstein. Please support our friends at EXO Event Center, located in Denver's vibrant Rhino Arts District. EXO Events can host safe, socially distanced events for 25 to up to 175 persons outdoors and up to 100 persons indoors. If you are interested in hosting an event for a corporate gathering, fundraiser, client appreciation, birthday or anniversary party, or morale-boosting happy hour, EXO would welcome the opportunity to be part of it. Please visit exoevents.com for more information and book your private event today. Okay, welcome in to the latest Gen X Music Show. We got the crew here with me. Coming all the way from the southwest corner of Denver, drinking what appears to be a beer. A man I have known for as long as I've known these other two people. Longer. Yeah, this is true. Longer. The first, one of the first people I met in the city where we met, I would like to introduce you to Mr. Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hey, what's up, Morning?
And coming to you from not New Mexico, a gentleman who shares much of the same taste in wine that as I do, I would like to introduce you to Pat Guerin. Hello, Pat.
Morty, good evening, sir. It's great to be here.
And a man who is adjusting his camera.
He's on mute. he's still muted. Yeah.
Who has muted all of us. and who is drinking an Oktoberfest beer. I'd like to introduce you to Magnus. Hello, Magnus.
Brothers from other mothers. Always a pleasure.
All right, so today we are doing songs that can be stories, short stories, in a song.
As good as any short story.
Yes, and I had a couple criteria for mine, I'll get into when we get to me. But Pat, since
all about
we come,
you, though, isn't it?
What's that?
It's all about you, though, isn't it?
Well, normally things are, yes, but.
Oh, okay.
Pat, we come to you for definitions, and to start us off of the show, give us a little bit of grounding. So when you were looking at like stories that could be just, songs that could be just as good as any short story, did you have a personal criteria of how you approached the selection this week?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that if you're too broad with this definition, then any song can kind of fit into it and tell a story. And so I wanted to ensure that I didn't do that. So I wanted something that like specifically spelled out a story to the point where maybe even the lyrics weren't as melodic or perfect for what a song might encourage you to do, or a songwriter might be encouraged to do when they're constructing a song. But instead, they go with essentially a narrative. Yeah. Through the balance of the song, where they tell a story from start to finish. And so, you know, when I was, that's what I used as my own metric. I know that it was hard to kind of push away from albums to do that, because there's, you know, maybe another discussion involving that, where there's a whole album where the arc of a story is told, but to find it in individual songs, I think is, you know, gives those songs sort of even more meaning and even more reason for us to talk about them.
I found myself, and just to throw my own criteria in there, I had to limit myself away from concept albums, because they're in the definition of a song within a concept album is only part of a story, and what I was looking for was a complete story within a song, you know. Definitely. So I think that is where I did it, and I was going to let you guys know, I was going to deliberately antagonize Joe and do 22 minute epics prog rock songs, but I would do it.
Yeah,
I just decided not to this time, and to focus on some brevity this time. So with that,
you guys should do an antagonizer podcast. That would antagonizer. I really would love that.
That sounds like a
two of you antagonizing one another.
That sounds like a Dio album.
Yeah.
Timely. I think, you know, there is a danger here, because any song tells a story, even if it's a story of a feeling or a moment. So I confined myself to the criteria you just, you know, laid out, which is narrative, which means probably but not necessarily third person, a definite beginning, middle, and end, something that I think in my mind I could flesh this out into a short story or even longer, were I so inclined. I think for me, you know, it's just modern songwriting is not inclined toward that by and large. I think that's definitely an older songwriting tradition to tell narratives, you know, since the 60s, less so. So I suspect a lot of our choices will be decades old.
As always, it's pop music that like moves the needle away from sort of the core of the art that we talk about every single week on this show, that pop music is not designed to consume a story with a beginning, middle, and end. You know, half of it's based on like a bass line or a drum beat, and that's it. It's a completely different category for sure.
Well, Joe, how did you approach this?
Well, it was my idea, so I've been thinking about it a lot longer than you guys.
So I want credit, damn it. I want credit.
No, I don't have to have credit.
You have it now.
I know, I do. I'm just being honest. So because it's just like I had a half of mine. I think the reason I had the idea for it originally was someone like John Prine. I'd listened to someone like John Prine. And that's cheating, because like you could use every single song he ever wrote is like a better than most short stories. And it's a freaking amazing song.
Well, I think he's agreed. John Prine should be celebrated at every opportunity.
Yeah, well, totally.
We might as well dive in, because this was kind of the germ that started in your head. So let's hear number one from you, because I'm curious to. And to get your kind of feel on what your number one is, and what kind of concept you had going forward.
I didn't really rank them so much.
The first one. Yeah,
You will say first.
What's that?
The one you will say first.
Oh, just the one I'll say first. Yeah, I'll just start with basically the top of my list, which is The Mercy Seat, which is a song by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, which I don't know if you've ever heard the original song. It's kind of hard to understand the lyrics. It's a very... sonically complex song, but then Johnny Cash covered it on his third American Recordings album, and the lyrics are amazing. You know, they're about a convict basically looking at the electric chair as if it's the throne of God, more or less. You know, it's like in all of this, it's this story about this convict waiting to be executed, and it's amazing. So that's kind of my first
one, which pretty much guarantees that both Nick Cave and Johnny Cash will sing it, right?
That's exactly, like
right
up yeah. there. It's their bread and butter.
Kind of, I mean, there's sure to be a through line of Johnny Cash throughout our discussions.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah. And there should be Nick Cave, too, because he's a great storyteller. They're very much in the same tradition as Cash.
Great point.
You ever heard Let the Bells Ring, his tribute to Johnny Cash, Nick Cave and the Bells Ring? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Great song. They were definitely brothers from another mother, like Magnus likes to say.
Like us and Magnus.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Cash was really well known for his work with convicts and prison reform, and you know, advocating for that community.
You're a supporter of that too, Magnus.
He's a big supporter.
Because I'll be a member of that community.
I might as well start
pre-planning.
Yeah.
Well, that American Recordings 3 is my favorite of his American recordings.
Personally. I can see that. That's one of the strongest ones. Yeah.
But as with any Nick Cave song, it's sometimes it takes someone else to bring out some clarity in his song.
Well, especially with that one, because I don't know. I mean, I like the effect that the song has, but it's kind of, he's kind of yelling it, and it's like there's other stuff going on. It's kind of a wasted opportunity in some sense. I've heard a more acoustic version of him doing it, just with him and the piano, which is amazing. Kind of more like the Cash version. You can really hear how good those lyrics are. You know?
Yeah, I saw Nick Cave in London, and he did it, a piano acoustic version.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, Magnus, number one.
Well, let's stick with Johnny Cash. It's not a Johnny Cash original pen tune, but he certainly made it famous, A Long Black Veil.
Yes.
I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he performed it on his first Johnny Cash television show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And it's a story about someone who's wrongfully accused of murder. Now, he has an alibi. Our protagonist has an alibi for why he wasn't the murderer. But his alibi is that he was with his best friend's wife. And so rather than destroy their marriage, he willfully goes to the gallows. And the song is about the woman coming to his grave at night when she's alone in a long black veil because she can't, no one can see her mourn for him.
Yeah.
It's so incredible. It's goth as hell and beautiful as hell and Johnny Cash to the bone. And it really is a story. You know, he talks about the hangman says, son, where were you? If you have an alibi, you won't have to hang. And he tells the whole story about his trial and then going up to the gallows and seeing her in the crowd watching this execution.
Yeah.
She didn't even shed a tear. Like, she was acting like she didn't care.
Yeah.
And that was the last thing he saw in his life is, you know, this person that he loved acting like she didn't care if he died or not because she had to act that way. Just absolutely amazing. And then it's been covered a million times. Johnny Cash version is still the best. Although Dave Matthews, I'm not a huge Dave Matthews fan, but he actually did a really good cover.
I was going to say the band, I think,
it did really well for them. And they did it really well live too. So I got a hand.
Yeah. And I think it might've been more a solo Dave Matthews cover that he did with Tim Reynolds.
Yeah.
I'm not certain about that, but they do a great cover. And honestly, like not to give it away too early here, but that's, I think one of the best choices for this category. Like that song is spun gold and it's so lyrically perfect. And you know, when you first start hearing it, it's like, oh, this is like a melodic, beautiful song. And then tragedy unveils throughout the lyrics and tells that story through the full arc. Then you gave a great synopsis of it, Magnus, and how could that not be on this list? And you can make the case it's the best example of what the sort of spirit of this topic relies on.
Well, it is there and resolved. Yeah. You know, it is its own narrative, and it goes from beginning to end, which is really what we're looking for on this. And I do really like that Cash's version a lot. That's probably my preferred one.
My favorite version, actually, not to put anything against Cash version, is the one I probably heard the most is the band did it on Songs from Big Pink.
Oh, they did.
Great. Yeah. So great.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great
choices all around so far.
Pat, your first choice. Oh, Magnus is just like, I've checked out. Oh, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Say, fuck it.
And he put us on our toes.
When's my next choice?
I got my one in. I'm done.
I was already told it's the best one, so see you later.
So, Pat,
Uno. Well, I mean, I'm afraid that, you know, we could all have chosen this next song. I think that it's the most perfect example of it. You know, Hurricane by Bob Dylan is literally just a true story that we may know about or may have learned about in the movie made about it, but the story is all told in the song. And kind of what I said as my my parameters that I put into place was that it was, you know, a narrative tale. I mean, this is a perfect example. It like name checks the characters by name, refers to them in multiple verses, even if it's just like, you know, the person that's calling the police. It talks about a very at the time controversial story, you know, where this boxer was accused of murder and convicted of it, and there was some sort of dubious nature to the investigation, and that's all fleshed out in this magical song that the album version I think clocks in at over 8 minutes. And on top of it, in addition to telling the story, it's not just like an old folk song with some like light guitar in the background, like advancing a narrative. It's it has a great melody. And, you know, I think if you just heard it on the radio, it would be like a pleasing sound. And then to dive into the content really underscores why I think this is a perfect example.
I'm glad you did a true story, too.
A short story.
I consider that as a whole category itself. There's been a lot of great songs that are based on true stories. I don't know if you guys have ever heard Two Daughters and a Beautiful Wife by Drive-By Truckers. Really, really sad story. But another good example of that kind of songwriting. There's been a lot of great songs that were, true stories that are just sort of made into ballads, you know.
Well, and the song actually led to some actual real-world changes, right? As far as case and getting some legal.
So, exactly, Magnus. And so the space between, you know, a piece of journalistic work or a piece of poetry or something and a song gets much smaller there, because it ends up having that type of impact by conveying this tale of ultimately like a wrongly convicted person for a murder, to the point where there is resolution that comes after the song is written. You know, the story seemed to have been told within the lyrics of the song itself. But the story continues afterwards.
We're going to pin this triple murder on him.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you, Morty? I just said how what a great mentality it has.
It takes some liberties with some of the actual events, but it's very, and that's why I kind of don't mind it being in this, Joe, because it does kind of fudge on the
edge. It doesn't matter if it's a completely true story. That's not the great.
It's based on true events, but you know, a lot of great fiction is based on true events too. But it is.
But it's a story. It tells the story, Morty. Morty. I mean, I was only getting extra credit from Joe for it actually being true. But in general, there's no obligation for songs that tell a short story to be factually correct.
It's got no complaints for me. In fact, you could have chosen any song from Desire. Because
that's what I was afraid of, is it's kind of cliche, but this song stands out.
It does. It's the best song on the album.
I avoided Dylan just because I thought it was too easy, but that's still a really great example.
Yeah, you know, it is.
I think Tangled Up in Blue may be better than any short story I've ever read. I mean, it's like, it's one of those songs. I mean, it's like, because it defies storytelling convention on more than any, almost any short story I've ever read. You know, it's like...
It's for exactly those reasons that, you know, Bob Dylan is, recipient of the Nobel Prize in Literature.
Yeah, which he didn't even want.
Which he didn't want.
Which makes it even cooler.
I completely agree with the choice on that album, because it's the best song on Desire, too. It's the best musically, too. Which I think is, for me, it's part of the deal here too. I mean, sometimes the words get bogged down in the music, or the music gets bogged down in the words. And a lot of story songs will get that way, because sometimes the music is just a means to put your words on top of it. But I think it works particularly with the violin slash
Carla Revere, right?
And also that Bob Dylan is telling the story, you know. It's like he's told a lot of stories, as you guys are saying, but it's like the fact that this is he's the one telling this tale is so critical. You know, because he transcends all those sort of, this song was relevant, like super relevant in the 90s when the movie came out, and people continue to look at it, you know.
Good movie too.
Which, great movie, you know, it won the Golden Globe for Best Picture, and Denzel Washington nominated for Best Actor. Film.
Would that movie have been made had the song not existed?
Definitely not. And I believe the song is prominent in the movie. You know.
Yeah, I think so. It's been a while, but yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree with that, and that's a good choice there, Pat. My choice is a guy I have a feeling will feature again in this discussion, is a song from an album called Nebraska. And that is a song called Highway Patrolman, my favorite song on that album.
And you're right, it will feature again.
Highway Patrolman is a great story about a cop who has a no good brother, but you love him anyway, kind of thing. And you bailing him out of trouble, and you look the other way because he's your brother. And it is very good narrative in a fairly short song. Done in advance. And I mean, no one listening to this has heard Nebraska, that's Bruce Springsteen's album. It's very spare. It's just him and a acoustic guitar.
Recorded on a four track.
Yep, recorded on a four track. And if you're not familiar with it, Atlantic City is on that album.
Best Bruce Springsteen song ever.
Yeah,
I don't think we're talking about that song tonight, but that's a fantastic song as well.
It is.
Agreed, Joe. And sorry to interrupt you, Morty, but just to underscore, that album has, you know, Atlantic City on it, and then there's other songs we're also going to talk about that aren't that.
Yeah, State Trooper is another good song on there. Highway Patrolman is the one that stood out to me because it's the one that is just the most. It fits to me the best part of the album Nebraska, and it's got that story into it, and I fudged a bit on it because technically Nebraska is a quote concept album, but it's not. It's a themed album of a certain thing, but I couldn't get away from the fact that it's such a good, concise, really amazing narrative within a, like I said, a fairly short song.
The song was made into a movie. There was enough narrative in that song to be made into a movie.
Which is kind of something endemic to Bruce Springsteen, right?
Yeah.
He's something very good at that sort of thing. So Highway Patrolman. That's one that it was one of the first ones I thought of.
That's a good movie. Seen The Indian Runner?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great movie. David Morse. Great cast. Viggo Mortensen. Way pre Lord of the Rings. Viggo Mortensen. Last Charles Bronson role. He died after that movie.
Oh, Joe, wow.
You bring it every week. Yeah. This is what I love about you.
Well, thank you.
What detail? I think. Speaking of that, I mean, I think that's what makes this song a perfect candidate for this category. Is it's like name checking the people involved. It's talking about the years that things are happening. Mm-hmm. Like, there's all sorts of like sort of prose that is so narrative that it could have been easily something that you read in a published book. Okay. But you know, Springsteen turns it into a song, and we're all better off for it.
Yeah,
does he ever?
Yeah. Absolutely, and this is like, I'm afraid that we're going to have this another one of these things where we're all going to agree with each other, but but it's okay because these are all good songs, people. Yeah, these are all good songs.
I'm sure we'll disagree.
I'll interject a note of disagreements.
Here it comes.
I think Hurricane is the least of the songs on Desire. It pales next to Isis.
I love Isis. Yeah.
Just to be clear, Hurricane is a perfect example of what we're talking about for our purposes here. I don't think it's the best song on the album. That's my only disagreement so far. It's a mild one.
I mean, no, it's not even part of the discussion is whether it's a good song on an individual album. And also, if you're going to talk about the songs, do it during the talking of the song. You've moved on.
I was trying to be cordial. Patrolman. That's why I let it slide.
Raise your try to be cordial. I've never had a discussion with you where cordial behavior became what prevented you from sharing your views.
Yeah, no, Magnus was, I could see him the whole time. He's like, I gotta say something about that. I gotta say something. I don't care about Highway Patrolman. I gotta say something about Hurricane.
I'll wait my turn, though. I'll wait 5 minutes when we're done with that discussion, and I'll circle back.
Yeah.
Because Morty reminded me that dissension is encouraged in this.
Well, then I'm like, holy shit, here we go.
Exactly. All right, Joe, number two.
Well, we got to stick with Barry Springsteen because my second song, and that, again, these aren't in any kind of order, but my song of the three is My Father's House on that same album.
Yeah.
Great song. Which is the most heartbreaking song I've ever heard in my entire life, but a great start at the same. You know,
that's number one most depressing song because you know the depressing songs. That's number one, huh?
I know. That's on a song full of depressing, an album full of depressing songs, that's the most depressing song. That's quite a bit. That's like you can hear the ambulances right after you hear it, you know, like, it's like Suicide Watch after a song like that. But yeah, I know it's about a guy who has a dream one night about his father. You know, like he's lost in the woods and he runs through the forest to get back to his father and falls in his arms when he's a little boy. And he realizes when he woke up that like he should try to mend fences with his father. So he goes to find him and goes to the house where they lived. And he doesn't even say how many years it's been, you know, in between. But when he gets there, there's someone he doesn't know and she doesn't know what happened to that guy. So his father, he'll never know what happened to his father. He's just gone forever. You know, maybe alive, maybe dead. It's like if you don't cry, or not cry, but if you don't least feel sad after that, you are pure evil.
A manly misting is definitely appropriate.
Yeah. For oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. At least, yeah. Really?
Great choice, Joe.
Yeah, okay. For sure. And I mean, this furthers the point that this category is like basically a layup for the likes of Bruce Springsteen. I mean, we're talking about Dylan, we're talking about Springsteen. Yep. These are the guys that bring it with the songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah.
All those guys. Yeah. This is their wheelhouse. And it's not a wheelhouse we see very much anymore.
And I think more for Springsteen though, because
in mainstream,
Boss at least, unlike Dylan, Dylan does tend to be a little more opaque than Springsteen does. Sure. Springsteen is very clear, concise, exactly what he's talking about. And I think that helps with him in this category because it's just something you can grab onto.
Yeah. And I think that's a reflection of the generations, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dylan playing electric guitar blew people's freaking mind, and half of them were angry about it. Where once those trails were blazed, and Springsteen was able to be like, hey, yeah, I'm writing these songs and I'm telling these stories and I'm not going to make any apologies about it, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's a great song. I can't listen to it that often, Joe. It's very...
No, me neither. Like I said, it's too damn sad. Yeah.
It's very sad. It's one of those that, but I, whenever I hear it, I'm like, God damn, that's a good song.
You know? Yeah, totally.
So, all right, Patrick, number two.
So my next choice here is the song "Fast Car" by Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, so good.
And I know we kind of spoke about this beforehand or talked about it briefly, and this just comes to mind for me so much because I didn't know who Tracy Chapman was. I thought it was a male at first, and then as I dug into it, and you know, this was like the breakthrough album in like 1992 or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't remember the exact year. When was it, Joe? Oh, it was late night.
Yeah,
but I mean, in such a concise way, it talks about sort of like the struggles that the characters are going through due to like their race. It talks about addiction. It talks about like, you know, leaving an abusive or addicted partner. And it just tells a story that is like so relatable to people that maybe we've all known in our lives, or a story that is out, you know, that like you can relate to as having happened to a person. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And so I thought it was a natural choice for me because also in my own personal experience, this is one of the songs that I heard like earlier on in my exploration into music. And it was like, wow, this told a whole story in 3 minutes or whatever it is. And it's a compelling story. And I could listen to that song, you know, 1,000 times and be interested in what's being said each time.
That's another good album as far as having a lot of songs like that. It's kind of like Nebraska. Maybe, I don't know, every song on Nebraska tells a concise story, pretty much. There are songs on Tracy Chapman's first album that are definitely more pop kind of songs. I mean, they're still like have messages behind them or whatever, but there's more than a few songs on that album that are like Fast Car that tell like a, you know, tell a story.
And I think that fits into what we're saying here, which is like, this is a unique genre of songwriting. It's a different sort of type of person that writes these songs because their albums then have numerous examples of it.
Yeah.
And it does sometimes allow them to cross over into some pop music where they're recognized by people that aren't just naturally drawn to them because they're fans or they're fans of their genre, but that they have exposure to them because they cross over into popular culture or pop music. And that's why then they have this longevity. And so people that are really, you know, attracted to the music like us that can go back and make, you know, associations with it or say like, oh, you know, this is a good example of the style of music that clearly we all can find that we enjoy.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and this is good. People got to keep in mind here. This is pre Melissa Etheridge, Indigo Girls.
She was around. She hadn't had a hit yet.
Yeah, she hadn't had a hit yet. And you know, pre Sheryl Crow. I mean, this is like a singer songwriter-y kind of exploration of something that a lot of people.
Suzanne Vega is another really great example.
Yeah, Suzanne Vega. Yeah, that a lot of people couldn't relate to, and yet it was done in an extremely pop-friendly manner, and it became a hit. It became a big hit, as far as I remember. Yeah, so it was all over the radio. I mean, you couldn't get away from it in the late 80s. It was
a top 10 hit for sure, and it was wildly successful. It catapulted that whole album, I think, to wide success. I think that it definitely is a song that endures. And I like Joe's alluding, so I think the album endures over time. Mm-hmm. And all those examples of Suzanne Vega's and others, I think, did come later, you know. And and this was a song that talked about things that were sort of difficult, especially in that era in pop music, and it made it easy to listen to a story about it.
Yeah.
And then another thing too, it's like especially if something's strong melodically, I mean, how many people like listen on the radio, listen to the words, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that's another thing too. Like that song is like, unless you really start listening to it, like, man, this song is depressing. You're like, but like, you might just be like, oh, this is pleasant on my morning commute.
All you hear is we got a fast car, you know.
And we got a fast, like, oh, I love fast cars. Yeah, those are great. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's what makes a song that combines those things so interesting is that you can do both. If you can tell a story, but also be sort of melodic enough that you're on top 40 radio in the late 80s and people are hearing it. And then oftentimes, you know, the introspection into the song comes later. You go out and buy the album at your local, you know, a cassette store or whatever was going on at that time.
Local Sam Goody.
Sam Goody, you know,
my parents bought that one on CD when I was living in, when we were living in Steamboat Springs in 1980.
Yes, I believe there was one of the CD clubs of the BMG or Columbia House was involved in, and that was my parents acquiring it at one time and then, you know, being able to listen to it. So it was current at the time. I think it stands up well. There's cover versions of it that are still done today that, you know, continue to keep that song alive and are pretty remarkable. And anyhow,
I'll look that up. I've never heard a cover of that song.
I think one of my favorites is by the British musician Passenger, who is a singer-songwriter type guy, and he does a great cover of it. He has a covers album, and that's, I think, the first track off of it.
Cool, I'll look that up.
All right, Magnus, number two.
Great choices all, guys. Really happy with all of these choices. You can't really argue with any of them. I'm going to come back to something we were talking about earlier with my next choice, which is songs about true stories and whether or not to alter some details if you're writing about a true story. Mm-hmm. And of course, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which is a very interesting song. It's a great song, in my opinion. What's interesting about it is that Gordon Lightfoot was writing about a very real tragedy that had just happened. I think the ship went down in 75 and his album came in 76.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So he must have been writing about it as he was learning about it and as it was in the news. Huh. And my understanding is that he was, because it was such a fresh story and there were real people involved who had lost loved ones, he tried really hard to get the details right. And even in subsequent recordings have altered some things to get them even more accurate in light of subsequent information. I think it was his producer who told him as he was writing it, kind of struggling to get the facts right and fit it into the structure and the rhyme. Don't worry about it. Just tell the story and your writer's block will go away. And he did. And the story came out with a few altered details. So I think that was the right advice from his producer. But like all of the songs on my list, it's about death.
But it's a great subject, you know.
Yes. but just so you know, again, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have a ship sailing out for Cleveland, according to the song. In reality, it was Detroit. And everything seems to be going according to normal. Storm comes, and things get progressively worse until the crew realizes there's no way out. Yeah. And just really haunting. And, I mean, just an incredible story and very beautiful folk-esque structure.
Yeah. And,
it's a great song.
Can you sing a few lines of it for us, please?
Me?
You got to sing with a Canadian
You're
accent.
You're
a singer. Yeah.
The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
I'm gonna decline to compete with Mr. Lightfoot.
Okay.
I can perhaps
that's
Morty.
Fair.
The Leslie's arm from the Chippewa on down from the big lake they call Kitchigoomy.
I mean, that's a great example. What's incredible about that song, Kraft, is that he was able to fit these Canadian and Native American names into these rhyme schemes.
Yes. Points for that point.
But great example of a third-person narrative tells a story from beginning, middle, and end, a true story. As a songwriting challenge, very difficult, great song.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree. Love Gordon Lightfoot. Hard, so too. Listening to Beautiful a lot. That one was one of his hits, but I'd completely forgotten about it until just like recently. It was like one of his big hits. It's on the same album as Don Quixote. I don't know if you guys remember that one. Yeah, but really great song. Yeah, great songwriter.
It's probably one of his most famous songs too.
Definitely.
Interestingly, like yes.
Three, probably.
And it is a great song. As a matter of fact, I think one of the great metrics of why this song is perfect for this category is because many people have no clue what the hell the Edmund Fitzgerald was, but I guarantee you the Wikipedia lookup stats for that particular entry are all based on coming across the song by Gordon Lightfoot.
It's all the songs and, first and then the exes and after.
Yes. Yeah. What a storyteller. What a perfect song. Oh, yeah. And it gets into those things that I enumerated earlier that I think are so important. The specificity of the location or the people or those things, and works them into the lyrics as if it were, on the pages of a printed book poetry.
Patrick, it's the specificity that really brings it to life. You know, when he says at 7 p.m. they had water coming in. I mean, you know, like you can see someone looking at the clock and knowing like, oh, this is when we're going to die. This is the moment I realize we're going to die.
Well, and he said later that he got the idea or like wanted to write about it after he saw the article in Newsweek.
Mm.
So it was he saw the magazine. He hadn't known about it in real time. He saw the magazine in Newsweek, the story on it, and he decided to write a song on it, which is, I think, even more amazing, because some of the stuff he really had to, I mean, think about having to write about this sort of thing with the sensitivity to the people whose families were lost and that sort of thing, and still managing to come up with what really is one of his 2 to 3 signature songs. It's absolutely amazing. Yes. Sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, guys, remember Newsweek?
Yes, I do.
I don't remember Newsweek, but I do remember the song was a joke on Seinfeld. When Elaine said,
"That's why you know it's appropriate."
Yeah, it's... Elaine said, "Oh, I love Edmund Fitzgerald's voice."
Yeah, I remember it.
And Jerry goes, "No, Gordon Lightfoot was the singer. Edmund Fitzgerald was the ship." And she goes, "No, I think Edmund Fitzgerald was a singer, or Gordon Lightfoot was the ship." And he goes, "Yeah, and it was rammed by the Cat Stevens."
I love that. That's so great.
Good.
That is a perfect time for us to take a break. We'll be back in just a sec. Well, speaking of the gales of November, it is not quite there yet, but we will be coming back to week 5 of the NFL right now. And look, some of you lost some money. Some of you won some money. Speaking of winning money, Patrick, did you win any money this year?
Yes, I was so excited for sports to come back because sports gambling became legal and there were no sports for like 4 more months. I have been able to be judicious in making some small wagers from time to time, and they've proved to be fruitful thus far. So get involved.
get involved. And week five is in the books now, and it's time to review the tape and get ready for week six. There's no better place to get in all the action than DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. To add the excitement of week six, DraftKings Sportsbook is bringing back their can't-miss offer. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, please head on over to the App Store now, because you don't want to miss this. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new users a chance to receive a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. Patrick, you have already signed up, so you are not eligible for this offer, right? But if you are not,
but like, I already took advantage.
Yes. But if you are someone who wants to follow in Pat's footsteps here, you need to get on over to
double your paycheck,
and come in get a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. On top of that great sign-up offer, DraftKings offers great odds boosts every Sunday to make it rain, and rain is spelled R-E-I-G-N, just for your information. And on top of that sign-up offer, I already read that. Don't worry if football isn't for you. DraftKings is giving you basketball fans a 200% profit boost on any basketball market once you sign up. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code MHS when you sign up and get $1,000. That's code MHS to get a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000 for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21, Colorado only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. All right. Getting to my choice for number two now. And I went with Dylan, but I went with Dylan in a different context. And that is from
Jacob.
Yes, Jacob. Oh, God, no. What a joke about that.
One headlight, Joe. One headlight.
Oh, never.
No. Great album. Great musician. I don't know why you're talking smack about that.
It is Tweeter and the Monkey Man from the Traveling Wilburys.
Monkey Man.
What a choice.
But the interesting thing about this, and this is why it fits into the context of this evening amongst the quartet of us, is this is a very Bruce Springsteen sounding song. It's Jersey. It is very much it is done with the Dylan flair, because it's kind of, once again, it's opaque. It's not, you don't get a true sense of what the narrative is, but it is not as linear, definitely, as a Bruce Springsteen song, but with the chorus of, and the walls came down.
That's a great chorus. I love that.
All the way to hell.
That George Harrison wrote that chorus, by the way.
Yes. What's that?
What'd you say,
man? I didn't get it.
George Harrison claimed to have written that chorus.
Oh, yes. Well, that definitely wasn't a Dylan chorus, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's actually like the Traveling Wilburys version of Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts. Mm-hmm. Isn't that kind of like the same kind of story?
Yeah.
It's a quirky song. It's about basically some crime to people. Mm-hmm. And my favorite line is Janet told him, no, not that one. It was, Jan said to the Monkey Man, "I'm not fooled by Tweeter's curl. I knew him long before he became a Jersey girl," which was like just enough, this just quirky enough to kind of like throw into that song. But it is a complete narrative, because he ends the song as the narrator in a bar, right? It's as if this guy is sitting in a bar talking about this song, right?
I think maybe for people who might be listening to this, I think you should explain what the Traveling Wilburys are, because I bet there's almost nobody who knows what that is.
They were a syndicate. No.
There you go. A super band.
A super group formed of Tom Petty, George Harrison, Jeff Lynne, and Bob Dylan and George Harrison. And
Roy Orbison was in there in the first
one. Orbison.
Yeah, Roy Orbison. And it was like it came together by accident, because George Harrison was looking to record a B-side to his one of his songs on Cloud Nine, I think.
That makes sense.
And it kind of just stemmed from that project there.
And Jeff Lynne produced that album, right?
Yes, he did. And then they kind of got together at Bob Dylan's house in California and they came up with this entire album. And this song, it's amazing. It's not as Dylan dominated as the second album was.
I love that first album. I remember having that on tape. That's another one of those early memories of buying, tape cassettes, which most people also listening to this probably don't remember.
If people don't know about cassette tapes, they're not going to be interested in anything that we're talking about.
Good point, Matt. I forgot. Thank you for keeping me grounded.
Or 8-tracks in some cases.
I remember.
The only 8-track I ever saw in my life was Joe's.
Cordoba. Joe's Cordoba.
Hey, so. 77 Cordoba. I got
what a beast it was. A sweet beast.
The ladies loved it.
Is it true that the Tweeter and the Monkey Man was actually deliberately like name-checking the names of Bruce Springsteen songs? I had always heard that. There was an homage to Springsteen, and that there's titles of Bruce Springsteen songs scattered throughout. Is that not true?
Thunder Road in it. He does. Oh, okay. It was out on Thunder Road. Tweeter at the wheel.
I forgot about the line. Wow.
I'm going to look that up because I remember hearing that. Yeah. It was an homage to Springsteen, and that there's clues throughout.
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely going to listen to that again.
It's an extremely clever song, and one I've always appreciated. One of the standout tracks on that album, which is a great album. I suggest anyone go out and check it out.
It's good call.
It's very accessible, and all the songs generally are good. So, Tweeter and the Monkey Man from it's a Bob Dylan song, but it's in a different context. So that's where I go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good call.
All right, JBH, what do you got?
I'm gonna go back to sad songs again. Unfortunately, I just only really thought of that after we got started. All the songs I've picked are, other than Mercy Seat, which is kind of a downer too. Mm-hmm. The other two are just incredibly sad songs. And my third choice is Martha by Tom Waits. Mm-hmm. It's off his very first album. And it's all about a guy, obviously, in the context of the song, Tom Waits was probably only like in his 20s when he recorded that. That was in 1973, his first album. But in the role, he's an old man calling a woman who he was once in love with and seeing how she's doing and talking about his life and how it's gone and how her life has gone and wishing that they hadn't parted. And it's another one of those. What did you say, Magnus? A manly misting should happen after you've listened to it. Yeah, it's one of those.
It's appropriate. It's appropriate in some instances. That would be one for sure.
It's like that, and getting hit by a car. It's like those two things where, like, it's okay.
Nothing in between.
I don't know if I agree with that, but yes.
I mean, you should be allowed to be moved by any form of art.
It is. I cry like a baby all the time, but I'm not really what you would call a man, quote unquote. Like,
you're a man's man, Joe. What are you talking about?
No, not so much. I mean, I'm.
Oh, come on. You're a fine gentleman. It's all right to emote with a song or a movie or any sort of thing like that.
And you were so sad.
So yes, you did. How dare you?
So beautiful you said that, Pat. I think
I'm just here to provide cover for you, gentlemen, and your refusal to acknowledge that the fact that you like sad bastard music is because you're a sad bastard, and that it connects with you, and that's
and
okay.
I'm not crying.
Thank
you. Joe's always happy. I'm surprised. I'm just surprised you didn't choose What's He Building.
Oh man, any of Tom Waits' spoken word stuff is some of my favorite stuff of his too.
But that doesn't does that count though? I mean,
not really.
It's not a song.
It's not a song. You're talking about, and he was really influenced by. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Ken Nordine, but he was he had a thing called word jazz. He actually had an album of it in like the 60s. It was literally like it was just kind of poetry. He wasn't unique with this either. Like think about like Jack Kerouac being on like the Steve Allen show, and Steve Allen would play the piano, and Kerouac would read his poems over Steve Allen's piano. There's actually a whole album of that stuff like that. So I mean, this like kind of it's very jazzy. Yeah.
Well,
deep cuts, Joe. Deep cuts.
I don't think, and this is the one that I did. I you know, when you're thinking about this song, Tom Waits has had a very, very varied career where he has sounded completely different than he did later in his career.
Oh, God, yeah. He adopted a Louis Armstrong sound pretty early on, like within by the third album. And then he started adding Howlin' Wolf into it. He kind of sounds like a cross between like that first album and like Howlin' Wolf. I don't know if you listened to any like great old Howlin' Wolf songs, but it's like he does. It kind of sounds like a cross between what he actually sounds like and Howlin' Wolf now.
What's he building in there?
That's a great one. Especially for Halloween. That's a Halloween song if there ever was one.
Totally.
Tom Waits is definitely, his influence as a songwriter definitely exceeds his impact in chart success for sure. People have no idea how many Tom Waits songs have been covered that were big hits that he influenced.
Downtown Train.
Bruce Springsteen wrote Jersey Girl because it's like, wouldn't Bruce Springsteen have written that song? Doesn't that make sense? But it's like, nope, Tom Waits wrote that song.
Well, no, like I said, Downtown Train. Rod Stewart had a huge hit on that song. I think that's the most popular ever the Tom Waits song
that he covered
because probably. It was such an enormous hit in the late 80s.
Well, we talked about it too, the Ramones cover in I Don't Want to Grow Up.
I was just going to say that was the Ramones' last hit, you could say, was a cover of a Tom Waits song.
Used beautifully in I don't know if you guys have seen Jojo Rabbit, but
they
used Tom Waits' version in that one. Yep. And now I almost can't separate those two things because they're it's so perfectly used in that movie.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie.
Great observation.
I highly recommend everyone see Jojo Rabbit. So, Patrick, number three.
So it was hard to, wedge the numerous choices that were bouncing around in my head, but I chose for its kind of clarity and brevity the song Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, which I'm generally not a fan of theirs personally.
Really?
I think they have a lot of kind of, I don't want to get into it, Joe, but anyway, this song transcends sort of like time. Before the song was written, it can apply to all kinds of stories that may have been told or that we can imagine. And, current day, it's basically, the notion that you're just like some regular schmo, you're not anything special. And in relation to a fortunate son, you have it a lot harder. And I think that, it's a song that follows the constructs of like a pop or a rock song with like choruses that repeat itself over. And it basically, I think, is like only three or four verses, but it tells a whole story. And you can relate to it, and it's still kind of referred to as
very timely, especially for the war in Vietnam at the time.
Yes, exactly. You know? And there's no way to understand that time better than through the songs, and this is such a perfect sort of representation of that. I mean, that's before my time, but I feel like I lived it because I've been able to observe the music from that era, and the story that this song tells, I think, is an interesting story. Relating to, the sort of like difficult topic that was Vietnam in that era.
Well, yeah.
The interesting thing to me was I remember like it was like 2002. They turned that song into a Levi's commercial, and they said what they did was they cut it off. Some books are born made to raise a flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue. And then they cut it off because this is right after 9/11, so everyone's waving flag and all that stuff. But then right after that line is like, and when the band plays Hail to the Chief, ooh, they point the cannon at you. Sort of thing. And I'm like, oh my God, you people just used a snippet of this song and you completely bastardized the meaning of it.
You should write down songs that have been bastardized as a topic to go over. Because I think that we could have great conversation about exactly what you're pointing out there, where they they cut these snippets out in order to meet some sort of like communal feeling, but the song actually represents the opposite. And so it's like it's an outrage.
Well, it's funny. Fogerty doesn't own the rights to Creedence. He got sued for copying himself.
Yeah.
He got sued for the old man is down across the road. Run through the jungle.
Yeah,
so he had to go into court and defend himself against himself. How ridiculous is that?
Tells you everything you need to know about why musicians hate record companies, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Write that down. We can do a whole show on the screwing of artists when it comes to music. And imagine, just take the thought project for one moment. Think about all the music that never got made because of the goddamn record business and how permeated the whole industry for its whole inception, up until semi-recently, where people can just do things on their own and release it on iTunes.
Patrick, before we move on to Morty's pick, I have to say I'm a little surprised at you not throwing in a Jason Isbell song.
Well, Joe, it's funny that you say that because I was just a moments ago in our break toying in my mind about one of many Jason Isbell songs. Mm-hmm. And the one I was going to choose was Children of Children. Because it's on Something More Than Free, and it basically tells the story of a person that has, you know, a child as a teenager, and what, and from the child's perspective, and being like, hey, you sacrificed so much. Anyway, because I didn't choose it, I don't want to go too deep into it. But I was afraid that it wouldn't be well known enough, or that, you know.
I put Martha. No one's heard that.
That wasn't part of the criteria. You could have picked that.
Oh, no, you can do whatever you want.
I know.
Whiskey Town song that nobody would have heard. Mostly just in the terms of like a song I wish I had written. Like, it's like I'm not writing songs anymore, but man, I wish I'd written that song. Yeah. You know, one of those kinds.
You send me that song. I want to hear that song. I love Whiskey Town. But, you know, I'm also waiting for the perfect time to unload my 100% appreciation for Jason Isbell and all the music that he does.
He's my favorite former drive-by trucker.
Drive-by trucker. Yeah. He wrote some of their best songs, too, and still loves them even better than before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that shout-out, Joe. Love it.
You're right in his wheelhouse there, Joe.
Mm.
All right. Up next, Magnus.
Magnesium. My
third in my Death Trilogy pick. And I'm going to come back to something you said, Patrick, for your last selection. Brevity and clarity are the key words for my last selection as well. There's a song by the British band Hot Chocolate in the 70s called Emma. And they're most known for their song, You Sexy Thing, of course. Mm-hmm. But they have an incredibly sad cutting tale in Emma. It's about a couple. They were together since they were five. Emma was so pretty, a star in everyone's eye. And they grow up together. They get married at 17. She wants to become an actress. She goes on all these auditions. And as they grow older, it never happens for her. She never gets that big break. She becomes more and more distant, more and more depressed. And, of course, it ends with him coming into their bedroom and finding her dead on the bed, suicide note in her hand. Apologizing to him. She couldn't do it anymore. She said, like, just couldn't keep living on dreams anymore. Just an amazing short story. It tells literally from when they're children to her death. And it's been covered a couple times, and Sisters of Mercy did a famous version. Andrew Eldritch used to introduce it in concert by saying, all those who have tears, prepare to shed them now, which is gloriously pretentious. But they did a really amazing version. And if you haven't heard it, I recommend you check it out. It's a beautiful, sad tale.
Magnus, was that your first exposure to Emma? Was Sisters of Mercy?
It was. Yep. Yeah. And I remember looking at the listing and saying, you know, that Hot Chocolate was credited as a writer. I'm like, Hot Chocolate. And I went and bought a Hot Chocolate album and loved it. Most of it is very different than Emma. I mean, it's definitely atypical for their catalog, but still.
Yeah.
Well, wow, then you're like, I believe in miracles. Yeah. That's a good song. It's a good song. I prefer the Sisters of Mercy version because I think it fits the tone of the song.
Definitely fits there. Yeah.
I think so, and like all of these great songs that we've talked about, you know, a lot of them, there's been a great cover. You know, an artist has latched onto some emotional core there and done it, like Dave Matthews with Long Black Veil, or so I like that. I like the Sisters version. I love the Hot Chocolate version as well. But great narrative, short, painful, beautiful. Yeah.
And interesting to point out that we've referenced several songs that fit this topic that have many covers. You know, significant covers by well-respected artists. So it's sort of a commonality amongst the storytellers of music rather than just the sort of like, lyricists that write less narrative lyrics.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny, like you, Patrick, as you're waiting for, you were considering tinkering your last selection. I almost put a Lou Reed selection on this list. My problem was I couldn't decide which Lou Reed. I feel like I'd be remiss if we ended this podcast without mentioning Lou Reed because he has so many great story songs.
Mm.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's maybe for a future episode.
You could do it.
But good call. I also had Lou Reed on my list, and you know, how can you not? It comes right up when you think about these things and the way that those songs resonate with you when you listen to the stories they tell.
Yeah. Any song from New York would fit in this in this podcast.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well,
you know, back to Emma, I would. It's the Sisters of Mercy version, as I pointed out before. It just seems to fit what the song is intended to be.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Sometimes you get songs like that, like by Hot Chocolate, where it's just like the composition, or at least the way they present it, doesn't fit where the song is going. You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's perfect, like The Wind That Shakes the Barley, but there's some there. Yeah. You know, there's, you know, that's a good one, and
that was the other day. Dead Can Dance. Yeah.
Yes, I was just listening to it this morning while I was taking my walk, and I'm like, I need to do something else. I need to switch to something else. But the leaves were falling as I was listening to it, and it was like, it set such a perfect scene. So I'm like, oh, I gotta keep listening to Living the Shades of Arley. But yes, that's an excellent, excellent, excellent choice, Magnus. That's a great, great song. I think my choice is the only one that may get some guffaws here. And it's a song that I have on here because it was way, 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 way ahead of its time. And from an artist who's not known for writing his own songs. And that is The Killing of Georgie by Rod Stewart.
That's a good one.
It's about the killing of a gay man in New York.
True story again.
Yeah, true story. It's a killing of a friend of his. In New York, and it was way, way, way ahead of its time. No one was writing a song about this in 1970. I think this came out in 75, 76. No one was writing a song like that. And it's a complete narrative, and it's an actual, you know, song. I mean, a lot of Rod Stewart songs are very, particularly from like 68 to 75, 76, were all autobiographical. In a sense, mm-hmm. they were like Rod Stewart's, you know, own experiences intermixed with all the covers he did. Yeah, with all the covers he did. This was mm-hmm. different in the sense it was a story about someone else. And it was interesting to do that sort of thing in the mid-70s when, let's face it, that was a completely risky thing to do. And it's a complete narrative, and it's a good story. And you kind of are, and if you ever listen to the song, you kind of are engrossed. It's very 70s sounding. It's the production is very dated, but
it's very short,
But you are find yourself immersed in the actual story of the song, and I think it's ranks up there with one of his best ever tunes.
It's a great song. Yeah, it's sad.
I'm not familiar with that, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, it's from A Night on the Town. That was 1976.
Yeah.
It's the same album where he covered Cat Stevens' First Cut is the Deepest, right?
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
Joe, bringing it.
Yeah, I just remembered that one. That those two songs are probably the best on there. Or Tonight is a good song, too.
Tonight has I Was Only Joking on it, which is one of his good...
No. I Was Only Joking is on... Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Tonight's Tonight. Tonight's the Night has Hot Legs.
Most of what I have of Rod Stewart is like the 80s hits, and then like, but like his 69 debut album, you know, the Rod Stewart album, mm-hmm. all the way up till like the mid 70s.
Yeah.
He kind of went into the disco era, you know. Like, I mean, I've heard the best version, like, Do You Think I'm Sexy is a kind of a stupid song, but have you ever heard the Revolting Cox version of that?
It's very fun.
Revolting Cox was a side band that Al Jourgensen, you know, from Ministry had, mm-hmm. and there's some great songs. But one of the best songs on that album is their version of Rod Stewart's "Do You Think I'm Sexy."
That's actually the best version of that song, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. Yeah.
Magnus left. Oh, he's back.
Thanks, Marty. It's a Night on the Town is the name of the Rod Stewart album. So you're saying the one that had "I Was Only Joking" is
Tonight's the Night, or no? It's Footloose and Fancy Free.
Thank you. Okay, that's where.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay. That was a great side thing that meant nothing to anyone ever. The two of us. I like it when we go on things like that. You know, we're just like,
That's people listening are like, God, sport.
That's, yeah. And I realize this, and this is an indicative of Magnus, you, and myself, and not so much, so much Patrick here, who,
Pat likes to keep things on course.
I can see Pat soul leave his body sometimes when we start talking about this medieval. So, but
nerding,
nerding.
That's
exactly.
That's to be fair, Pat, you keep things on track.
Thanks, Charles.
What's that, Magnus?
I don't think even Rod Stewart followed that discourse.
No, he was like, I don't remember any of this. What? My wife is 14. Oh.
Joe.
Actually, there's a thing, there's a great thing where he you know, like he like so many other artists did an Unplugged, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's this great thing where he, and it's with Ron
Wood. Many of them.
It's with Ron Wood, which of course was his guitarist, The Faces. You know, like The Faces, I don't know if you guys have ever listened to The Faces, but they were awesome.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yes. Yeah.
But they do this thing where he's like, oh, I remember this song from 71. It's like, my wife was four. It's like, damn. Good to be a rock star, man. Yeah.
Oh, it was Rachel Hunter at the time, right? It was Rachel Hunter.
Yeah, it was Rachel Hunter. Yeah. Rachel Hunter.
Now we've totally lost people. Rod Stewart's wives. We've totally
been on that Rod Stewart path.
Exactly. So that's it. And so kind of to sum up the podcast so far, I mean, did this kind of journey through story songs, did it give you a greater appreciation of the art of the song that's a complete story? I mean, Joe, this was your idea. So, I mean, you obviously couldn't get any higher esteem for what you presented to us already.
I wrote like 30 songs down. I mean, seriously, there's just so many, you know, there's just so many good ones. Like Jackson's early stuff is a perfect example too. Jackson Brown's first three or four albums, they're great stories on those albums. Like for Late for the Sky.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. Anything Warren Zevon ever wrote. Like I said earlier,
John. Oh, Warren Zevon. I could have. Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like you're pointing out what a terrible job we did, Joe, because there's so many things that we did not address.
We only have an hour podcast. I just want to make sure, like, if we get nothing accomplished from this podcast, it should be that someone out there listening who's like, oh, I've only heard whatever crap they play on the radio. Oh, maybe this will help me, like, maybe listen to some good stuff, which is not on the radio.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and if anyone takes anything from these podcasts, this is actually kind of one of the reasons I wanted to bring us all together. It's because I want to give people kind of an idea of how we think of music, and maybe that will expose them to things they haven't heard before. And
right. It's like, hey, general public, we have super specific tastes. If you listen to them, you might agree with one or two.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
I think the four of us, we run the gamut.
Yeah, we do.
For sure.
Yeah,
I think that's true.
Yeah. Wait till
you
hear
like you and Magnus and you know and Morty who know all the deep details behind the music.
Yes, that's people don't even want to know, man. Yeah,
just sure. Wait till you hear Joe, Magnus, and I go on goth music.
Oh yeah.
That'll be
week.
Pat'll be like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm not doing this one.
He's already out, Manny. Oh,
he's already out. Oh, there he was. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us on this one. I hope everyone enjoyed our journey through story songs, and we'll be back next week with an even better episode. But it's hard to top this one. But it'll be even
better every week, Morty.
Better every week.
That's what we need to shoot for. Yeah.
So see you all next week. Goodbye.